session number 26550, Reel 3.
Mr. McAvoy, Reel 3. So what was the next? You weren't there long. Still in August then, is it?
No, I think beginning of September.
Okay. So
I've even got the commissioning date somewhere, but I can't remember where.
So where were you sent next then?
HMS Fargo. USS Fargo. It was...
The barracks, Fargo barracks.
Yeah, it was an old flower warehouse, which had been done out, believe me, beautiful. The floors gleamed. And we were there for about 2 nights, I think. Then they sent us to Fraser, another Yankee barracks, USS Fraser.
And what were conditions like in these? They're both American barracks, really, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
What were conditions like in the barracks?
Unbelievable. Not a bit like the Royal Navy.
In what way? What was different?
The food. You never used your hammock. You had the bunks laid out with all the gear ready. So you just got in. One night when you were there, with Rahm's illness. Oh, by the way, you had to be 21 to get a drink them days.
In America? Yeah, well, I'll come back to that. Keep on about how the barracks were different. What else about them?
Well, they were vast. It was the first time we'd really heard, you know, the loud ailers. Theirs seemed to stand up for some reason. Mind you could hear them and understand them, so that helped. How vast they were.
So what sort of loud hailer message were coming out? Tannoy message, you mean?
No, but all, yeah. They were all Yankee-fied, you know. Away sea boats, crew and things like that. We never heard them before.
And what about, what were you doing while you were at Fargo and then Fraser Barracks? Fraser sounds like the main one, but...
No, Fraser, we were using that to sleep on because the Yanks at the ship, which they were sleeping on, our ship. Once they were handed over, they moved into barracks and we moved into the ship.
Now, what were you doing? What duties did you have while you were
in? Name it. Scrub it, lift it, push it, paint it.
What, on the ship or on...
On the ship.
So you'd go ashore and a working... You'd go on the ship as a working person.
As a working person.
And then go back to Fraser Barracks.
Yep.
So tell me what you were doing on the ship. Go on. Tell us in more detail.
Name it. Stores, ammunition. You name it. We'd done it.
And what was the name of your ship?
Foley.
F-O-L...
E-Y. K-4-7-4.
And you were doing all this, getting her ready?
Of course, yeah.
And what were your first impressions of her? I mean, you weren't exactly a naval expert. I mean, you hadn't been on a lot of ships, but what were your first impressions when you saw her?
Well, I've seen one. I'm not sure which one it was. From the opposite side of the dock, from the deck. I went aboard a ship to see a mate of mine. He lived in Sweden, he's dead now, Eddie. And he was in Cape Town Castle. And while we were in Fargo, I went over to see him. And he said, "There's them ships, Billy. There's one of you're going on me." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "Everybody knows you're all here to take them." And I thought, Jesus, how the hell are we going to get that across the Atlantic?
So your first impression was it wasn't very big?
I'm looking at something from, say, 35 to 40 feet above the waterline on the Cape Town Castle. And there's this thing that seems to have about 2 inches above the waterline. There's a bit of mist there that I should have put in early on. When I first come home on leave, the first time I came home on leave, from Raleigh, well, the only time I come home. I got the ferry boat at Liverpool at midnight. And I'm sitting on it and I'm watching the gangway. Have you ever seen a Mersey when it's angry? Make a point. The gangway's up there. And I'm sitting down here and they're coming to meeting together. And I thought, bloody hell, what have I joined? I'm not terrified of it, you're bloody scared shitless, you know.
So when you saw this captain's class ship, you remembered that?
Yeah. Yeah, I remembered the size of it. Unbelievable. She had a board. She had a pre-board down after about 3 foot. Perhaps a little bit more.
But it looked not much.
No, we ever seen one.
I've seen pictures of them.
You've got a picture down a club of mine.
Now, so what about, I mean, when you were at Fraser doing this working parties, would you get out and about in Boston?
This is
in Boston. You might not have mentioned this is Boston. They're both
Boston and Charleston.
Fraser's at Charleston, is it?
Charleston.
They're next to each other, aren't they? Boston and Charleston.
No, it's about two stations away. You know what? They have an elevated railway.
And did you get out and about in the towns? Tell us about
that. People were very, very good to us.
In what way? How? What sort of hospitality did you get?
Well, there was this young lady who took me home to meet her mother and father and aunties, uncles, you name it. As a matter of fact, I've got a photograph of her granddaughter she sent me up a few years ago.
It's all right. They can't see it.
No, you can. It's on the top there somewhere. Yeah.
And what was so good about the hospitality? I mean, what did it offer? I mean, some people would be a nightmare to get taken to someone's house. I mean, what was good about it?
They'd take you home, feed you, wine you, dine you, give you the lot. You could go on the common in Boston, and they used to have what they called a buddies club.
And what was that?
That was a hut where you got copy and donuts, biscuits, whatever, orange, apple, you name it. And you also got tickets for shows or cinemas or whatever. The idea was to keep you away from the ladies of the night who inhabited the common. Marvellous nights. I never went with the ladies of the night, but I enjoyed it. Only you couldn't smoke in the cinemas even then.
So everything was free?
It was all free. Yeah.
Now,
if you went up your own back, like to the cinema, obviously you had to pay. But you couldn't get in the pubs until you were 21. There was ways and means. We all did it. You know, having bribing somebody to take it in.
Now, what about, how did you get on with the... Some people had trouble with the US sailors. Were you aware of any friction with them?
None. If there was, I never seen it. You know, it's no good me telling you a spinning you.
No. I want to know what happened to you.
Not me. Never.
So, when did you actually go aboard the Foley? When did you, you know?
No, I forget the date.
Do you know roughly when?
I think the commissioning date was about the 3rd of September or 4th of September.
That'll do. So, September.
We actually took it over. Prior to that, her name had been Gillette, USS Gillette, and she was 270. And let's see if I've got this right. I think it was 270. Yeah. On my papers, I was due to join 272. And they switched it while I was in Asbury Park. And they actually joined 270. 272 was HMS Gould, which was sank on the 1st of March, 44. So I was lucky.
Now, what was the commissioning ceremony like? I mean, was it much of a much... I mean...
No, not on the... You know, I've seen so many since. It's unbelievable. But...
Well, what was this one like?
Oh, just short, sharp. And the Yankee woman named the ship and the whole bit, you know. The guard up on her. They marched off. And we took over.
And any photograph to commemorate it or anything?
No. I've only got one photograph of me when I was in the Navy. And I got that by pure chance.
Now, you were just an ordinary seaman?
At that time, yeah.
At that time, yeah. And which mess deck were you on? Do you remember?
On number 9 in Blue Watch.
Now, what can you describe the mess deck, what they were like, in as much detail as you can, cause it, so that people can picture it almost?
It used to be a shelf. 6-7 shelves at the bottom end. And all that was ever on them was taps. And on, along the side there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There was 18 bunks in layers of 3. In the middle, on the other side, was the mess deck locker, like tea, sugar, milk, things like that, were stored. At the far end was the watertight door through to the torpedoman's mess and the sick bay. And a cold water fountain, which as soon as we sailed, it turned off for some unknown reason.
Now, I wanted to ask about the one thing that's unusual about it is that they were American ships and they got bunks on, haven't they?
No, they were actually designed by the Navy in conjunction with the naval architects in the States. And they were built specifically for that purpose, for that time.
But they did have American things on. I mean, they had bunks, didn't they?
They had bunks. They had cold water fountains.
Now,
they had ice cream machines. They had a laundry.
What did you think of the bunks?
Well, I never really talked to myself. I always slept in a hammock.
You were allowed to?
Oh, well, you weren't allowed to. You did these things because you wanted to do them. But you could sleep in a bunk.
So you just had your hammock with you and you just slung it up. Did it? They had hooks then in the mess deck, didn't they?
You always made provision for. It was easy to do it. I used to sleep in a thing called the after tiller flat, which was after the mess deck. I slept down after. And it was after the mess deck. It was also the auxiliary steering. You know, if anything went wrong with the steering, he always went down the after tail flat where the auxiliary steering was. And he used to sling me amateur.
So when did you start doing that? Right from the start? Or?
I'm not sure. A couple of days, probably a week after.
You didn't like the bunks then?
Well, I did, but once it got rough... You're thrown all over the place.
Now, what about the other? Tell me about the other, ice cream machine or whatever it was.
Never used. In all the time we were on, I can never. The laundry was used, but you had to pay for that. So what you've done, you've got a bucket and done your own washing.
I'll come back to it. I'll do the washing. But so the US stuff, was it just not switched on or not used, or was it actually taken out?
No,
because I thought they took it out when they refitted it when they got back. Well, I mean, it may not have been on the phone.
Well, I'll tell you what they'd done with the refit when we got back in the States. they were top heavy. So what they'd done, they'd give us some extra balance by putting extra depth charges on the decks. We had, I'm guessing, 20, 22, 24, 26... about 28 depth charges when we came from the States. Now, when we got back from the States, they put 90 on either side, down aft. So it gave us that bit more buoyancy, balance, force, the weight down a bit.
And at the same time, they took all the ice cream and water coolers and things out, did they?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't think they did, being honest. The water coolers were still on when we finished. When I finished it in 46, 45.
But they were still, they were off.
As far as I'm concerned, the ice cream machine, I'd never seen them. But I know in the galley they still had things like, potato machines, potato peelers and all those. They still had those.
Okay, so... Well, what did you think? The ship wasn't built the way British ships are built. It was all welded instead of rivets. Now, what did you think of that? Or did you?
Well, we used to get these stories about them falling apart in the middle of the Atlantic. And it's a load of rubbish. They never did. if one of them did, I never heard about it.
Did they worry you, though? I mean, you know, you got the stories. I mean, it didn't happen, but before, you know, when you first get in the thing, what did you think? Did the older men witch
about?
You want
my honest opinion? I think at the time I was too thick to worry about anything. I never used to worry about
it. Well, it didn't bother you, it was all welded, because you didn't think about it.
Well, you know, you heard the stories about these ships falling apart, but you never ever met anyone who knew where they were, you know, or what ships they were. I mean, it was a well-known factor, we were told, that all these Liberty ships were falling apart. Yet the same ships would go sailing all over the world and taking a terrible hammering.
Now, so what happened? You came on board, you commissioned. How long, what were you doing then?
Oh, then they done those the Navy's favourite form of torture. They call them running up trials. So you take it out, see if it'll float, see if it'll sail, do the guns work, do the engines work. You name it, you try it.
And why was that a torture?
You're joking. It was always the poor jolly Jack that had to do it. While them stood on the bridge with these inspectors and beamed down on us and said, "We haven't done very well there, have we?" It's true.
Now, what were you doing during the work? What was your action station? Or at the start, when you first went on board, and what were you doing? You said you were Blue Watch, but what was your, you know, what was your cruising station? What was your
cruising station was Beagle, which also, you know, it also provided the lookouts. That's like either side the bridge and the masthead. And also, if there was an alarm, you know, anything happened during the night, you closed up on Beagle and loaded it.
Now, tell me what we've come to the lookout bit first. What was your job on B gun? And B gun, this is a 3-inch, isn't it? It's a 3-inch.
It's
a second back. So, what did you do? What was the gun crew? What did each member of it do?
Well, being the tallest on the ship, on the gun crew, it made me the loader. And after about a fortnight, they found out that I had a gunnery rate, so they put me where I should have been. I was a blind gunnery rate. A QR3.
Now, when did you go? You haven't mentioned that. When did you get that?
I went to White Island.
When was that?
I forget. I'd have to find me papers somewhere.
Now, just to scope, you went to Whale Island before you went to Stockheath Camp, so that's round about June to July 1943.
Yeah.
And so that's where you know.
I'm hazy on dates.
That's all right. What do you remember of your training at Whale Island? Just take me through it quickly. What did you learn there?
Oh, you were the smartest fella in the Navy when you left there. They marched you, they ran you, they jumped you. They give you a gunnery course. I don't think the gunnery course lasted more than about 2 weeks. The actual gunnery course itself.
And what gun was it on? Guns.
No, the only one you actually fired on there, you fired into a shelter. A sand-filled underground shelter you used to fire into it. And that was a 12-pounder, 12-under thing. And that was the noisiest bloody gun I ever heard. I'd forgotten about that. I am getting old, Aaron.
You're doing fine, don't you worry. So that was between June and July 1943, roughly speaking. If you, that all fits in. So, anyway, so getting back. So you were on the B gun. What did everyone do on the gun? On the gun? So there's a loader. What did everyone do?
Well, you had an officer who was the captain of the gun. You had a trainer, a loader, a side setter, and you had, did I say a loader?
That was you about originally, but yeah.
Yeah.
So how did the drill work? How did it actually happen? What was the order of events?
Well, he gave me a sight. As a blind gun, you know, your job was to set the angle of sight, trajectory, and fuses where, in the case of aircraft. Now, then he'd say, load with whatever, you know, armor piercing or semi armor piercing. And in the case of aircraft, you use the AT. And once it was loaded, it'd be train it on, layer on, and it would put this back to the bridge. The bridge would then say, fire whenever or whatever.
And who would fire it?
The layer. You always fired it. On the O's, it had a foot trigger. Now, if that failed, which is a rarity, the loader would attach a lanyard to the trigger on the on a loading thing and pull it, and that would fire it.
What did you think of the 3-inch gun?
A lot of noise. I don't think it done much damage.
Why not? What was wrong with it? Because a lot of people...
Too small. Far too small. It was all right in an anti-aircraft gun, provided you had the backup of all the guns in and bolters. But when it came to anything bigger, I mean, it's something he'd used to carry 4.7s, which would have took us out the water, never mind. But then again, it doesn't
really matter. Would the shells penetrate anything?
I don't really know. It was never tested to that effect, as far as I know.
So now the second part on B3 gun you mentioned was what was lookout duty on the bridge. Now tell us about what was lookout duty like. What did you have to do? You were sent up to be lookout on the bridge. What did you do? Where would you stand and what would you do?
You stand either port or starboard. There's a wing on the bridge. It's an open wing, an open bridge is on them. And you would, you had an area from 10 degrees, let's say, on the starboard side, 10 degrees from port to 90 degrees on the starboard side. So you covered that area. If you're on the look on the masthead, you had the whole arc of 180 degrees.
So sometimes you're on the masthead?
Oh, yeah.
What was it like up there?
I enjoyed that.
Now, why
no bugger could keep an eye on you up there. They used to wake you up every now and again. Can you see anything on the starboard side? No, sir. Nothing there. You were lying. the part of me used to tickle me was the getting up there. You had to go and go. I can't remember what they called them. They used to have these rods. I think they were called connecting rods, which connected the wireless to the masthead. So you had to go and draw them before you could go up the mast and then give them to the bloke on the bridge, who had to hold on to them till you come down again. Now, if somebody else was coming up, they would report to him and say, and he'd say, leave them there, swap over. But when he went up the mast, he went up about, about 30, I'm only guessing the distance, 30, 35 feet, till you come to the bottom of the actual crow's nest. But then you had to switch outward. So all the way up the mast, you had the mast in front of you. You with me? And you could see nothing under the mast. But as soon as you stepped out onto that, you then had about 10, 12 feet of open ladder. So you could see everything in front of you. So when you went to get into the mast, he had to climb up on the top to transfer onto the ladder while you climbed over the top of him into it. And I can remember the first time I'd done that, and I thought, Jesus Christ. It was unbelievable. You know, there's the ship going this way and that way.
Swaying.
And there you are. There you are, hanging in empty space and clinging up for dear life. But after the first time, I don't think it ever bothered me after that.
You weren't scared of heights, that scared of heights anyway.
No, I wasn't. Well, you did again, as I say, you didn't think about these things. Again, perhaps I was too flaming tick to think about them.
Now, what would you do when you sighted someone from, you know, from either the bridge or the masthead?
Well, you'd only report it to the bloke, and he'd then take the necessary steps or whatever it was, you know.
I mean, would you see much? What sort of thing would you report?
Anything. If it floated, you reported it. That was the whole idea behind it.
And how long would you be up there for? Or on the bridge?
An hour.
Is it longer on the bridge, or just the same?
No, just the same. You'd do an hour about. And there used to be age to be out on a cruising watch. And a killick.
So killick's a leading seaman.
Leading seaman. So what you would do, you would swap an arm.
And that would be, the B gun would supply these lookouts. The B gun crew. Now, you said that if there was an emergency, you'd close up to 3-inch gun. Was that your action stations as well?
That's when you went to action stations.
That was your action station?
No.
No, right.
No, X gun was my action station.
That seems funny. Why was your cruising station that one?
Don't ask me. The weird and wonderful work, their weary way.
So what would you do if there was an emergency? Would you go to the B gun or to the X gun?
No, if they sounded action stations, you went to your action station.
And that was another 3-inch gun? Yeah. Only that's the back one. The stern one.
Yeah. Well, the back will do.
So, but it was just the same gun? Just the
same idea, yeah.
But you weren't on the depth charges as well, or any other duties at this time, you know, when you first joined, aren't you?
No.
Now, so now, what about, you know, when you did your first sea trials, when did you first notice the rolling? If you did notice the rolling, but.
Oh, it was a hell of a roll she had, wasn't she? When we first commissioned it.
Tell us about it. What was it like? And was it just rolling, or was it pitching and rolling? You know what I mean, the difference?
Both. It was only when you put the extra weight on that you got to become accustomed to it. Wasn't so much a pitch as a roll.
But how bad was it?
I used to know this.
What did it feel like then? You know, I mean.
Well, you went that way and the mast went that way. You know what you were looking at? And you'd think to yourself, is this bloody thing ever going to come back?
It went that far.
It went that far.
To the side, yeah.
I think somebody said something about 38 degrees. She was going over that far. And when we got the extra depth charges on, it stopped that. Because she had more buoyancy, didn't you see? Yeah.
I think you mean it was lowering, it was less buoyancy, probably, with depth charges on.
More buoyancy. The more weight you put on, the more buoyancy you get, don't you?
Oh, right.
I think so. You could be nice, aren't
you? I don't know. You're the sailor. So, the sea trials. Now, the sea trials, you go back to Boston, to Charleston.
Charleston, yeah.
And then, did you go to Bermuda next?
Oh, yeah.
That was your working up trials, I believe. I mean,
that's right, yeah.
What do you remember of them?
Well, you got a pig with ears. They called him a field controller, something like that. And they made you do everything at the double twice. Like this one had a weird conception of survival. And we dropped the anchor. And he said, starboard watch, abandon ship. Now, these are fellas who have come up unprepared to go for a swim. Some of them can't swim, haven't got a clue. And over the side they went. Because, Sir said, you never seen such chaos in all your life. The next morning, there's about 20 of them being taken on the beach for swimming lessons. And I'm sorry I couldn't act the goat the night before. You know, because I've been swimming. Brought up in this area, you swam from kids, you know. And I've often killed myself for that.